Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. We have a special guest today. Her name is Hung Tran. She's a longtime friend, actually. She's known me since I've 22, 23. We go way back in San Francisco. She's now returned to Vietnam. She's from Vietnam, moved to the US a while back, studied there, worked there, is now back in Vietnam, a partner at Monk's Hill Ventures.
Venture partner at Monk's Hill.
Yeah, Monk's Hill's a big VC based out of Singapore, but they've got a great team here in Vietnam as well, investing in startups. If you need money, ping her. She might take a look. Hung, welcome to the show. Hung, being a venture partner, she specializes in venture capital, which is tech investment. Obviously, you've seen a big overview of Vietnam, not just from tech, but just how the country's going. But let's start with that. Thi Hung, maybe a quick intro for the audience, like who you are, where you're from in Vietnam, how you ended up making the move back here after such a long time in the U.S.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on this podcast, Hao. It's such a great pleasure to be here with you all today and speaking about Vietnam. It feels like homecoming. Mm. Like you said, I was born and raised right here in Ho Chi Minh City, actually in District Phu Nhuong. I did undergrad here, also in Ho Chi Minh City, Đại học Ngoại thương, right, under Foreign Trade University. After that, I started my career actually with Unilever, right on Sofitel Plaza here. Oh. I started in Vietnam, but then the role actually, had me work in different regional offices of Unilever in Southeast Asia, Manila, Bangkok. We were also consolidated into a regional hub in Singapore, like most MNCs did at the time. I actually at the time had the opportunity to go to the US for my MBA studies. So I came to the US, it was 2008, as the first Vietnamese student admitted from Vietnam to Stanford, the MBA program after the war. And so little did I know that, we started the program with a very rough patch. It was the recession in 2008. I graduated in 2010. Most of the international students at the time actually usually opted to go back to the home country. I wanted to stay and work in the U.S. So despite all odds, somehow I managed to get myself a tech job in Silicon Valley, and I started working at Yahoo at the time. Having had 4 years of experience there, having had the exposure and the experience of working and launching multiple communications products like Yahoo Mail, Yahoo Messenger for global audiences, we're talking about the scale of 500 million daily active users. So it was large global scale and a lot of lessons learned, especially it was my first U.S. corporate job. And there was also a revolving door of CEOs at the time. I joined before Marissa Meyer and then after as well. I've seen different changes to the culture of the company, taught me a lot. At the same time, I've always wanted to do a startup. So after Yahoo, actually, I left Yahoo to also start a company in Silicon Valley. It was a startup in the travel space.
I just remember the blue bird. There was a blue bird.
It was called Magpie.
Magpie, right.
Yes, okay. It's a female travelers club exclusive to empower women to travel the world. Okay. Yeah, so we went through the epitome, the Stanford accelerator experience. I would say I feel very grateful to have started a company in Silicon Valley with abundant resources for early stage founders. We went through the program. We also, graduated from the demo day and raised our first seed round. And after that, we were building the team out, also had an engineering team in Vietnam. For about 3 years into it, I started realizing there were some, hiccups along the way, like most founders, first-time founders have gone through. Eventually, the startup ended with an acquisition. With a Japanese travel company, wanted to acquire the team. So that ended up, I took a break, like most startup founders did after, a long run. And then after that, I worked for a couple of different startups right in San Francisco. And about 3 years ago, I had the occasion to come back to Vietnam for TED. And then right after that, I got stuck here because of COVID lockdown.
It's been 3 years in Vietnam?
It's been 3 years in Vietnam, believe it or not.
Okay. I mean, we've seen each other every few, a few times a year kind of thing.
And yes.
I remember, you got stuck here, quote unquote.
Yes.
You started working at Momo. You're a director of product, I think it was.
A business unit director local discovery product group.
Gotcha. At Momo. And then that was a couple years. And now.
After 2 years at Momo, I was last year I was thinking about my next steps, my next career chapter. And there were different opportunities. But again, after soul searching, this VC opportunity did come up, and Peng, the founding partner of Monk's Hill, we've known each other for quite some time. I met him actually as a founder in San Francisco. And so we've kept in touch all this time. I've always respected, you know, their long-term bets and his visionary thinking. When there is an opportunity for me to join the team, especially to empower, you know, founders who are a bunch of entrepreneurs, every single person at partner level or partner track level has been a former founder, former CEO in our previous life. And so we fully empathize what the founders are facing, you know, on a day-to-day basis, the challenges that they're facing. And so because of that, I felt like this is such a great opportunity for me to step in and be able to learn, but also, you know, help, again, create impact, especially in this, you know, to me, it feels like homecoming, really. You know, this is where I was born, where I was raised, where I have been empowered. And now hopefully with all the resources that we have at Monk's Hill and the ecosystem, hopefully be able to empower the future generation of founders.
I remember when I first met you in 2015, 16, I was at that point preparing to move to Vietnam already.
That's right, that's right.
And you were still like, you know, deep in Silicon Valley, getting your startup going. I remember it was your house in like
startup
Hayes
house,
Valley or whatever it was.
Noe Valley, in San Francisco. Yes. Startup house. And we had our startup there, you know, co-founders have beds or rooms there.
You obviously went through that period. You learned a lot. You got some successes and failures out of that. And now you're coming to Vietnam. How does it compare to your experience in California? I mean, a lot of, I hope, entrepreneurs, startup folks are listening to this program right now. How do they compare? Are there those resources here that you enjoyed in California? If not, what are those, what is missing here so that maybe some people can innovate and provide that solution?
Yeah. Great question. The long story short is, yes, there are quite a lot of differences. At the same time, I see some certain similarities. And I talk about this, the things I find similar first. In fact, the thing I find similar, most similar, in interestingly, is not something that you would be able to, it's not tangible. It's not something that you would be able to spot right away. But I find the entrepreneurial spirit, you know, like this energy, this positive, contagious, positive energy that you walk into a coffee shop and you talk to a founder. I mean, especially now that I've stepped into the VC role, I meet a lot of founders, you know, having this random conversation about their startup, something they're passionate about and they're building. And interestingly enough, you know, around you, there are people that are actually sometimes, you know, like randomly listening in, not because they want to eavesdrop or something, but it just happens that they are also having some similar passion, you know, interests. And so that energy, I find it when I first moved to San Francisco after GSB, that was in 2010, right? The early 10s. I actually, interestingly enough, found it here when I relocated back, you know, like evidence by the fact that we were just sitting in a coffee shop and talking about some projects. And then all of a sudden, you know, like somebody came by and he's like, okay, I would really can't wait to introduce myself. But, you know, you guys kept talking about diagnostics and I actually do work in that. So I wanted to introduce myself and let's talk. And so to me, that contagious positive energy, interestingly enough, I find that abundant here. And I think it's crucial to creating, to creativity, to building, because you need camaraderie, you need cohorts, you need different people that you can bounce off of, right? And this is creates the fabric of the ecosystem, the rich and deep fabric, and out of which then you started building, you know, a strong ecosystem. And to your second point, obviously Silicon Valley has been around for a lot longer in terms of the ecosystem. They've got, you know, VCs, startups, and, you know, multiple, you know, successes after successes, which then come back and, you know, again, keep building on that ecosystem. I think we know for sure that the ecosystem is still very nascent here. I think take VC as an example. The first VC fund I've heard started was IDG Ventures, and that was, you know, late 2008 or 2010. And so that was not too long ago, right? I mean, perhaps 10 plus years. And then after that, I think we remember our friend 500 Startups. Yep. That was the days that you came to Vietnam for, and you were asking me about that, I remember. And so that was not too long ago. I mean, literally when you came back to Vietnam, right? 2016 or so. So frankly, about the last 7 years that we've started seeing the rise of, you know, tech investors, early stage tech investors.
So I want to stop you there a little bit.
Sure.
I think in Silicon Valley, so many exits, so many success stories building on that ecosystem. Here, you mentioned IDG. They still have exits. They haven't, or portfolio companies that still haven't exited. We're talking 15 years later, still no exit. Right. Some of them have, some of them haven't.
Right.
I think that goes for a lot of funds, but globally, but especially here in Vietnam.
Right.
When will those exits happen? And I also asked that because you are a current VC.
Yep.
So you must be wondering that as well.
Yeah.
When you make those investments in Vietnam, how long do you think in terms of the horizon for exit opportunities here?
Yeah, that's really a tough question, Hao. And to be very candid with you, you know, we ourselves are going through those questions every day. As we talked about this, right? If we look into, let's say, Singapore, let's say Korea, let's say Indonesia, some of these countries with a little bit more developed ecosystem in terms of, you know, tech compared to Vietnam, we saw that actually in Singapore and Indonesia, they've had a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit ahead of us. They've had some exits, commercially, financially successful or not, debatable, but they've had some exits. Same thing with Korea. It's taken them decades to get the ecosystem to this point. I don't think that's going to be an overnight success or, you know, goal. And therefore, it's going to be hard to give a, you know, exact answer. That being said, you know, we saw in our portfolio some of the companies we invested in the very early days. Fund One, for instance, NinjaVan, has gotten to a certain scale in the region. They're present across, you know, most Southeast Asian countries. And we do have very, you know, like, good hopes for the potential exits. But again, there's no particular milestone. I mean, we can't control timing of the market. A lot of these factors, we you know, we're there as foundational support for the founders. And once we come in, we're a pre-A or Series A investor. What that means is, you know, we tend to go long-term with the founders, right? Once we make a bet in, usually is, you know, 5 to 10 years, if not longer. And so we don't sit there and, you know, wait to the clock ticking, when are we going to exit? When are we going to exit? We're actually here to back the entrepreneurs on their long-term vision.
Let's talk about the greater ecosystem too. So what are the players that usually do facilitate exits? There's the family businesses, there's the slash big businesses, there's family offices, private equity funds, there's going public, all these different factors. What is Monk's Hills doing to, quote unquote, educate the market or share more about the opportunities for these players to participate? Even also the NIC, National Innovation Council, they're highly significant in influencing how things can move with the government supporting things too. And they are generally very supportive, but what could they do more, if anything?
I mean, as you pointed out, right? I mean, the ecosystem will over time be again enriched by, again, more people participating in the ecosystem. We're actually helping a bunch of other investors and entrepreneurs looking into the Vietnam market, right? Because we're a regional fund. We have offices in Singapore, Vietnam, Indonesia. And, you know, as startups scale, they are looking into expanding, let's say, into Vietnam or vice versa. We also have investor friends who are interested in the market, stuff like that. We're happy to help share our knowledge and, you know, support others because simply we think is going to go back into, again, it's pay forward and it's going to go back to the ecosystem that we're a part of, right? To your point, we've seen, again, in Vietnam, naturally more early stage, right? Including ourselves. We're an early stage tech investor in pre-A and A round. But there's also more folks coming in a little bit later, right? As you mentioned, family offices, private equity. We're also seeing folks coming in the middle stage more recently, right? B stage and whatnot. So I think the ecosystem will naturally grow over time. To your point, the question around liquidity and exit remains a controversial question. We actually are actively working with policymakers as well. We're quite embedded in conversations, like you mentioned, with NIC. Other than Monk's Hill, we're also supporting a nonprofit that's called Angsana Council, which exists also to help facilitate these conversations, the intersection between business, tech ecosystem, and policymaking, right, to help facilitate to really spearhead the rate of growth of the tech ecosystem. If you look into, let's say, Korea, Singapore, 10, 20 years ago, including even the U.S., right? The U.S. is pretty interesting. Different states make different policies to attract capital flow and, more importantly, talent flow. Same thing in Korea, same thing in Singapore, that we've seen this happen probably in the last 10 plus years. And so we're hoping to emulate some of these lessons learned in other markets and perhaps, you know, apply those lessons here in Vietnam. Mm. And again, in those conversations, facilitate the, you know, the policies that enable much easier, starting up incorporations, much easier, P&L optimization, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so we're really betting on Vietnam for the long term. And that's always been the DNA of the fund, in that, the fund is a bunch of entrepreneurs backing entrepreneurs. And, you know, most of our founding partners have been from the bench of engineering, very systematic thinkers and very long-term visionary thinkers. So we're betting more in the long term.
Let's talk about the types of investments Monk's Hills make, especially in Vietnam. This is purely my experience.
Yeah,
I think innovation here is more operational innovation rather than technological innovation. I think those are two very different things, mm-hmm. in the sense that here efficiency, productivity could really be done better. Mm-hmm. We're talking about like logistics, supply chain, healthcare, all these different topics. But innovating, like creating new technologies, that's still very much a Silicon Valley thing. This is my opinion. I'd love to hear your comment on that. Do you disagree? Do you agree? I'm not in the investor space anymore, so I'm not out there as much. I have these high level conversations over a podcast, but we'll love your thought on that and what kind of investments drive Monk's Hill's excitement.
Yeah, for sure. I would say generally speaking, I think, the sentiment that you have is there's nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, the startup ecosystem is new here, so people naturally, gravitate towards what they know best. Mm. I mean, in terms of the deal flow that we're seeing, and we're seeing about 1,500, 2,000 deal flows a year, because of our check size, and, again, we bet on the long-term vision of the founders as well. We tend to come in, again, Series A, pre-A, which means, the product has had some traction, mm-hmm. some sort of product market fit, and then we work with them along the way to scale that up, right? Naturally, because of that, we don't do too many investments per year, mm-hmm. Because of our check size, mm-hmm. as well. In Vietnam, we've had a couple of portfolio companies, namely Elsa is the English language speech app, and then we have GeoHealth, which you might have also known, Raghu. Yep. We have Coder School, creating, again, online coding boot camps, and, frankly, the market here is massive, right? We have about 50,000 engineering graduates per year, mm-hmm. and so we're very excited about that for sure, that space. And then we also have Inker, that's an AI comics platform. Again, we're continuing to review deals. We're continuing to make deals happen. There's this, founders who come to me and ask, okay, with this current sentiment in the macro environment, are you guys still writing checks? And we're like, yes, we are. We actually are actively looking for deals and talking to folks and, pushing them into presentation in front of our partners.
I feel like this is an LP meeting. I feel like I'm a bank with hundreds of millions of dollars.
Maybe you should become an LP.
Yeah. Are you guys fundraising for next fund? What's that look like? I know Monk's Hill has had a couple funds. Correct me if I'm
three
wrong.
Funds already. Three funds. Yes.
And a couple $100 million each kind of thing.
Yeah. The last, most recent fund three was close to 200 mil.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're an LP, prospective LP listening, you can get in touch with him.
Venture partner, for sure. But going back to your question, right? Exit, mm-hmm. and liquidity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I really think that it's hard to put a time horizon to, mm-hmm. that.
I think, to kind of add in what I've seen at least is, if you look at other Southeast Asian markets, at least, it's more developed ones like the ones you mentioned, a lot of the ones that are filling the funding gap, usually it's from A to B. Because that's when you have like growth funding, mm-hmm. not just like product market and, mm-hmm. and all that. And those check sizes could go from 1 to 3 million and suddenly they jump from 5 plus, 10 plus. There just are not the local VCs or funding opportunities here. And I mean, private businesses, family offices, that's really big.
Yeah.
Family office activity in Singapore, Indonesia to fund B, C, D stage funding is massive, but here it's non-existent. That's changing.
That is changing.
I actually had a guest on the show the other day, and this is one of many. He is the chairman, I believe, of FPT Software.
Yep.
They started a incubator within FPT to fund innovation. So an accelerator of sorts. And he was like saying, oh, we want the next unicorn to be an Omnicon out of this. I was like, good luck. I think that's good. I think they're capable more than anyone to do that, but it's not going to be easy. Well, obviously they're starting at the very low level there, but FPT has also made bigger check sizes, investments at, or even M&A in the past. So let's see if that leads to anything. Let's reflect a little bit on the number of funds that Monk's Hills has and why the LPs keep backing Monk's Hills. I mean, each fund is 5-10 years time horizon. I imagine the first fund started 10 years ago, 8-9
Yes, fund one was definitely all of this predated me, right?
So there's a reason why they keep backing it.
Yes.
Is the VC asset class still very desirable among LPs, even in this time period? And why do they keep going into this?
Our funds, we've had three funds now. And over the time, you know, our LP base has also shifted towards more institutional investors, right? And institutional investors, as you know, they are definitely more long-term investors. They don't follow trends so much. They have their own, you know, portfolio. So
talking like banks, insurance companies.
Yes, and all LPs are global, all over the world, you know, the US, Europe, Middle East, including, you know, like Asia.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I can disclose all of their names.
Sure, no,
but
no need to. I'm not here to
but
get
these
you in
are
trouble.
Like, yeah, like these are like big names.
Yeah.
Even in the US, you've got like, you know, brand name foundations. And I think that is a credit to Peng Ong, the founding partner, and his co-founder, Kuo Yi. They've known each other. They've worked together for a long time. Peng is the was the co-founder of Match.com in the US a long time back. And so I think, you know, he's been one of the very first funds in Singapore, actually, returning to Singapore after his stints in the US and, you know, doing VC in China, GSR Ventures, came back to Singapore and started, you know, propping up, you know, together with other funds, propping up the VC tech ecosystem in Singapore. This was about 10 plus years ago. And so that's it's super interesting to reflect on that. The reason is because I think Vietnam is going through a similar junction, right? Where, you know, at NIC, I think we're talking about like, you know, coming up with ideas, proposals to help form, prop up the ecosystem here. How can the government play a more active role? And if they do, what types of role, you know, what types of incentives, what types of, you know, tax preferential treatment, stuff like that, right? And so Peng and his fund has always been able to do that earlier on in Singapore. And also we're actively participating in discussions like that here in Vietnam, hoping to help.
Match.com.
Yes.
They own Tinder now, or same group at least.
Yes,
I'd love to
yes.
have Peng on the show and talk about dating apps.
I think that would be fabulous.
I'd like his innovation perspective on dating apps in the world today.
Even I'm dying to hear that podcast.
Hung, I want to open the space a little bit. You come from, you're Vietnamese, obviously. You worked here for a while and studied here. You spent the majority of your adult life, though, in the U.S., correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'd love for you to, like, if you'd like to ask anything that you don't know about. I mean, you're an expert about VC and tech. Okay.
Yes.
And I think we've got some wonderful insights from today. But the point of, you know, Vietnam Innovators is to share to our audience about these industries that they may not know a lot about. So my question for you, and I'm not saying I can answer it, but I'll try, is who would you like to see on the show that you can learn from? It could be someone working in the airline industry. It could be someone working in real estate.
Yep.
Something that's parallel to what you're doing and could
help
better inform you.
Sure.
What are those industries and or no individuals necessarily, but kind of profiles people that you'd like to be on this show?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for asking. You know, I've always been a fan of the work at Visetera. And, you know, I do have questions for you simply because I'm just curious. You know, we actually have crossed paths each other in San Francisco. But then, you know, for the last 10 years-ish, you were here in Vietnam making Visetera and a bunch of other things happen. And I was in the U.S. and recently relocated not too long ago. So definitely would love to learn a bit more about your experience as we swapped places. Anyway, going back to your story, I mean, Vietnam is growing. It's super fascinating. It's a great, exciting time for me to personally, for me to be back, it's like homecoming, and hoping to lend a hand to be able to extend my support, my knowledge, the experience I've gained into contributing to this ecosystem that's thriving. If you look into GDP per capita, that Vietnam is, it's a part of the Southeast Asian economies. If you look into that, from the most recent research we saw from Bain, clearly in the last 30 years, there's always been a consistent trend that Vietnam has always been outperforming in that group. And then you have, you know, the second group of performing economies, which are Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia. And then you have the last group of underperforming, which is Philippines. So to that point, how could we continuously keep this trend up and to the right for Vietnam, right? On that note, is the question of leveraging our unfair advantage. What would those be? And how do we tap into our internal resources, external resources, and, you know, together, you know, do that? Personally, I'm interested in, I have been seeing the trend of sustainability investments around ESG, that theme. Not just ESG, ESG is very broad, right? But, you know, into renewables, into, you know, agricultural tech, a bunch of other things that I've seen coming. And I'm excited about that area because I do think we're here for the long term as human species. And so we have to think about how to make our lives better. And not just that, but, you know, value creation could be in the form of, you know, saving money, saving time. How do we bring it back to these economic questions? So I'm personally interested in that space. So any speakers that you have in that area, definitely would love to learn more.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of interest coming from, you know, Stanford, coming from the community of investors in Southeast Asia and founders as well. So it would be great to understand more from the experts. I would say also the other area is as GDP per capita grows, right? There's a lot more services and products that would be suited for the users in that process. Tech or not, I think it's very clear that, you know, at some point the Vietnamese GDP per capita is higher. And so where do they amass the wealth, or how are they going to think about investing? How are they thinking about, you know, transferring wealth from generation to generation? How are they educating people around that? So there'll be a lot of themes that would be interesting around that as well. You know, and you can go on about financial services and whatnot. So yes, I can go on with the list, but that's a couple of ideas to begin with.
Okay. Well, we'll take note. And for the audience, if you guys have any questions or people that you want to hear from as well, just drop them in the comments.
Now, I actually do have some questions for you,
please,
if we have a couple of minutes.
Yes.
So like I said, you know, it's fascinating. Our journey has been on the opposite end, even though we crossed paths in San Francisco. This was probably about 10 years ago. I mean, you were born in the U.S. You actually came back to Vietnam, first time, you know, even before we met, right? And so I'm just curious, I'm on the opposite end in that I was born and raised in Vietnam, worked in Vietnam for a bit, went to the U.S. for my MBA and stayed on, and, you know, now coming back. But so I'm curious, how has it been for you in the last 10 years living in Vietnam? You know, have you faced any challenges? What were those, and has that experience changed you?
7 years now, actually.
7 years.
Yeah, 7 years.
Well,
how's things changed? I mean, I've been working on Vietcetera since then, but it wasn't a real business the first couple years. It was kind of just like this blog that we'd write things. And yeah, we always had hopes that it would be sustainable, but it wasn't for the first couple years. It was just kind of like meeting people and seeing what happens. But I think a big learning for me was, in a place like here, if you're just around long enough and show that you can be an asset to people, companies, like, things will happen. So what I mean by asset, it's like, put it in perspective, like, okay, I was 22, 23 when I came here. Like, I knew nothing. I had no money, no experience, wasn't really good at anything. Like, I just need to, like, prove that I'm worth, like, being around. I just had this conversation earlier today. I think a lot of young people, they're encouraged to take on mentors and reach out to people for, you know, networking. But it's highly unlikely for someone that has something to share to want to just take a bunch of random coffees just for the sake of it. It just doesn't happen. You have to put yourself in a place, like, before you take something, you have to give something. And it's not that easy, and how that works for each individual person, it depends. But that was a mindset that I tried to have when I first came here, because I knew nothing. And my Vietnamese at the time wasn't even very good. And I took a job that paid very little in the beginning. So that's a good way to be an asset, I guess. I don't encourage just taking a low salary because that doesn't necessarily help. But I think just being an asset was something I had to change my mindset for. Because in the US, I also learned that people are very individualistic. Mm. Americans are trained to be very independent. And it's everything's merit-based. So if you as an individual can prove that, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it's very collective. Thinking and teamwork, and it's a very collective kind of energy and thinking. You can be effective as an independent individual too, but you have to prove that. That's one layer. And the second is within a collective system, can you be successful too?
That's super interesting.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
I saw. And that is what makes companies successful or not here. And I think a lot of foreigners who come here, Vietnamese Americans, or even Vietnamese have spent a long time abroad and they come back, they don't know that. And I think, one is the bare minimum is individual contributor. Like, you have to knock that out of the park, be an asset, especially as a young person. But then with over that, to get to the next level, you have to be a collective, be strong collectively. Otherwise, you won't last, or you'll burn yourself out. Or it's also like a fight against the collectiveness if you try to be too independent.
Interesting.
It just won't work.
Interesting.
Does that apply to everything? Maybe not, but that's been my experience.
That's very interesting. And I'm sorry I kind of interrupted you earlier because it just sparked, another insight in me that recently I also came across, we have a Stanford MBA student study trip every year that comes to Vietnam to learn and exchange conversations with business leaders on the ground. And I think the theme of this year is innovation in a collectivist culture, right? Since you mentioned, collectivism versus individualism, and that we both have seen big differences in the US and Silicon Valley and here. I'm curious how you view that coming from your firsthand experience being here for the last 7 years, especially in the context of innovations.
So there's this trend globally, but mostly applies to Americans because they're very privileged, like solopreneurism. Solopreneurism, the fact that you can be an independent entrepreneur, and just you, and you don't have any people around you. You can freelance people, you can buy SaaS softwares to automate things and all that. Living here, that's very frowned upon. Because people enjoy collectivism and taking care of each other, giving jobs to people for the sake of it, which I'm cool with too. I mean, I think having a team is great and it's very important. But a shift I've seen, especially since COVID, it's been this idea of just being an independent entrepreneur in the US. Like, this whole idea of digital nomading, which I'm not a big fan of necessarily. I don't advocate for that. But that is very different here. Let's take, for example, working from home. In the West, it's still very, very popular and almost a required thing to be competitive talent-wise. But here, it's like as soon as COVID lockdown was over, everyone rushed back to the office.
I remember that.
No one wants to be at home because everyone, usually, not everyone, but young people stay at home with their families. You don't want to be working in the dining room when there's like a cat running around and a baby screaming. It's just, it's not practical. Even if you don't have that, like you have your own little apartment here in Saigon or Hanoi. It's probably too small to be enjoying your personal space, because you probably won't have any. and even things like, let's be real, like my air conditioning cost per month in my apartment's like 700,000 or something like that, a million. And I don't even run it that much. It's just expensive in Vietnam. For the average young person who's 22, 23, and you're making 10 million a month, well, who's going to be paying 10% of their salary for air conditioning? You can't even work from home. It's not even practical. So you got to go to the coffee shop or work from the office. So that's why when a lot of people come, they just don't understand the dynamics of what happens in Asia and specifically this place. And so when you mention innovation, collectiveness, but people just enjoy being together because it's also part of the environments that they're exposed to and have to be in. You can't innovate when there's a baby screaming in the background. It's just not
maybe
possible.
Parenting products.
You never know. But I think that's a big difference.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm a huge fan of working in the office. I do not like working from home.
You must be very happy seeing the news this morning that Mark Zuckerberg is encouraging his staff to not be working remotely.
Sure. Innovation can't happen working remotely. I feel very confident about that. And we got away with it the last few years just because it was by force, essentially, mm-hmm. right? It was required. So, okay, that's understandable. But moving forward, the innovation of collectiveness, not just like mentality and way of working, but also just the physical environment that you're in, we'll see a resurgence. That's my future prediction. And Vietnam will be driven by that.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes to the chats we had earlier about encouraging, you know, policies and all that about getting people to come to Vietnam even. That's the start, I think.
Yes, you can't
just be working with somebody over there and then, and why would they?
Yes.
People have to know what's going on here. Come over here.
Yes.
Check the place out. Yes. Be here. That's what's going to drive the next.
Yeah. Very interesting. I wholeheartedly agree to that. I think the free flow of talent is going to be crucial, especially in the industry we operate in, right? I mean, it's tech. The biggest expense that we have is actually on the payroll, right? And so the free flow of talent is what made Silicon Valley. For decades, up until more recently, that's become, you know, again, it's a bit harder. But we're seeing similar trends, you know, Startup Chile, I remember. The Chilean government had sort of a CTO that was a Stanford alumni, who was appointed to that position. And he made a pact. And he, you know, gave money to startups and they came, you know, once they got screened and invested, it's sort of like an accelerator from Chile. You got invested, you move and you pack up and you got, you know, free visa, you know, a place set up, the program, incentives and all that for you to move over there. They worked together with AWS and a bunch of other big corps, big tech, to provide, again, the whole package for the team to just pick up and move. Easily. So that's one program. I think same thing has happened also in Singapore, in Korea, 10 years ago to attract, you know, the free flow of talent, not to mention the capital flow. The capital flow is just one side of the equation. But yes, I think on the same lines, how can we make that happen? I mean, it's exciting. You mentioned earlier in that the Netherlands, big investors group here now, third group that we've seen. I came across, you know, entrepreneurs from all over the world in Ho Chi Minh City. I was really, really pleasantly surprised. People that may have not had prior living and working experience in Vietnam, even, you know, from Sweden, from India, all over the place. And these are folks who have actually lived and worked in Silicon Valley before, but chose to live here now, right? And so how do we grow that number exponentially? Because we do know that the talent supply is going to, together with the capital supply, would drive innovations, right? Yeah, so, you know, if you have ideas on that, folks first to speak to, happy in all ears.
Let's do it together.
Yeah.
If you have any ideas, you can drop them in the comments and maybe the best ones will happen. Let's see.
Yeah, I have one last question.
Yes,
So building a startup like Visetera for the last 7 years, right? And I know on a personal front, you have just finished climbing Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. This was...
Kilimanjaro. Sorry.
Kilimanjaro.
Everest is impossible. No, can't do that.
Well, that may be the next project. But yes, Kilimanjaro, not too long ago, maybe just last month or so. What are the similarities and differences between the two, Visetera and Kilimanjaro?
Yeah. I've been sharing this offline, mostly not online. So this is the first time online. It was an 8-day trip. It's not for everyone. It's very deliberate why you're doing it. You have to go there. That's a flight. That's 10 hours. You have to spend some money. You have to plan and prepare. I packed everything from winter gear to baby wipes because you don't take showers for 8 days. There's no running water, so you don't shower for 8 days. There was actually a period where 3 straight days, I didn't even remove a layer of clothing for 3 straight days.
Wow.
Like it was so cold. You'd wake up, it's cold, and you'd go to sleep and it's cold. And it's just like that for 3 straight days, if not longer. I'm not saying that it should be miserable running a company because it should, but anyways, what was cool about it was everybody was there. There were 7 travelers and a few guides and porters helping with the whole trip. So 20 of us in total, let's say. And everyone was there for the same exact reason. How they prepared for it, what they planned and all that, that varies and who the people are. So there's me, my dad, and my uncle who are well into their 60s and 70s. There was a 35-year-old from Canada. He's an engineer that works in the like the Arctic Circle of Canada, like for the government or something. I forget. And then 3 others. One was a retired primary school teacher from Ireland, and then a mother or daughter and a father combo. And so very random people. And the thing is, a company is basically the same thing. It's a bunch of random people that are all there for the same reason. That's what it is. Let's not try to sugarcoat it and make it look like it's like some pre-planned thing. No, it's just a bunch of random people. They come to work at a company to try to achieve something. And how it's similar to that experience was everyone was there to get to the top of the summit. And so at a company level, there's three layers. You as an individual, you within the team that you work in, like sales, marketing, and the company. And each layer has a different summit, but it gets to the same point. So if a company can align on that summit, then you're going to get there faster. But if different people have different summits, then you're going either in the wrong direction or just take a very long time or costly. You're going to burn a lot of cash or whatever to get there. So I thought that analogy, when I was hiking, I had no internet for 8 days, didn't have my phone. So you just wake up, have breakfast, coffee, hike for 10 hours and do it all over again 8 days in a row, was awesome. It was just like a way for me to kind of just zone out a little bit and take something, an experience that could apply to professional or even personal work or my personal life. That was about 2 months ago. And not that we've made radical changes at the company just based on one experience, but it's allowed me to operate with a bit more clarity and alignment internally at the management team level, all the way down to as an individual. So it's pretty awesome. I think I'd encourage it for anyone. You don't have to go hike a mountain because it's not necessarily for everybody, but I don't know, doing a meditation retreat or doing some sort of activity that's a challenge. Like, I'm not a big fan of like just going to like the beach and just like, hanging out for 3 days and Instagramming. I do that, by the way, but I'm not saying that's a solution to reset, or it's not. Doing something like an activity like that, it could be one day. It doesn't have to be 8 days. You don't have to fly halfway across the world. It could be, I don't have an exact example, but there's something you can do here in Vietnam that's something similar. Getting that alignment, getting a group of people, it could even be yourself to do one thing, and it could be people that you don't even know. Like those other travelers, I will never probably see any of them again. Maybe one, maybe two, let's see. But actually one of them was like, hey, Hal, you know, you, your dad and your uncle are a lot of fun to hike with. Let's go do another mountain. Let's go to one in South America. I was like, okay, a couple of years, let's see from now, like send me the details. He's like, 16 day hike. I was like, dude, no way. I was like, the max I'll do is 5. Like from now on, 8 is like already pushing it. 5 is acceptable. But 16 is just like, no. Who very has time cool. for a 16-day hike? It's like,
that's very inspiring. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. I find it very inspiring, especially hearing the generational differences, right? You guys have, you know, your dad, your uncle, and they're in their 60s and 70s, and to be able to have that physical stamina to go all the way, as you know, with a 30-year-old guy, you know, that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that you've had that that break. 8 days away from, you know, internet detox.
Internet detox was one. It was actually quite exhausting, though, like physically and mentally. But it was a nice challenge. I'm very happy with it. But yeah, it took me at least 2 weeks to like reset properly, like mentally and physically. Like it was just punishing, but in a very positive way. Just like I wanted to challenge myself, and being able to accomplish certain milestones within that trip were like, nice. Like I can do it.
So. Well, on to the next one, hopefully in South America.
Let's see.
Or elsewhere.
5 days max. Let's see. So guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. We're going to end today's show with just some rapid fire short questions for Chi Hung. You can watch these on TikTok as well and Instagram if you'd like. So look out for that. Chi Hung, first question. What excites you about Vietnam?
Food. People.
Good.
Beaches.
Two industries that you're paying close attention to right now.
Financial services, wealth management, insurtech, all of those tangential spaces as Vietnamese are getting you know, more wealthier over time. That's a trend. Yes.
What's the second?
Sustainability.
How did you get into venture capital?
By talking to people.
Is Vietnam going through the infamous VC winter?
Depending on stage, right? Most Vietnamese ventures are early stage. So I really don't think so.
What's a productivity hack that you're most proud of?
Meditation.
On a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
Probably brunching with some friends, catching up.
What's a piece of media, could be a movie, a book, that you've consumed recently that left a really good impression on you?
I've recently watched a show on Netflix, Bernie Madoff. And especially now that I'm on the investment side, it was quite profound how powerful it could be.
Okay. If we searched on ChatGPT about Hung Tran, what would it say?
I haven't done that search.
Okay. All right, that was good. Okay, cool. All right, thank you, An. But yeah, Ji Hung, thank you so much for joining today's Vietnam Innovators podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you. And you're a busy person. You're making deals happen. Like, hopefully more deals will happen after the show. Looking forward to having you again with us, hopefully on the Vietnamese edition as well, so we can reach even more different types of people. We do have Vietnamese subs. For those of you listening who want to have the Vietnamese translation, you can watch it on YouTube. Thank you so much, Ji Hung, and we hope to have you back very soon.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Hao. It's been definitely a pleasure, homecoming pleasure. It's all sort of like seeing a long-lost brother in the U.S. and now back in Vietnam and reunited here. Congratulations for all the great achievements you've done with Etc.
Thank you for everything, Ji Hung, and I'll see you guys next time. You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.